Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. After spending several days at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, President Trump is back at the White House. Marine One landed on the South Lawn minutes ago after picking him up from the hospital. From beginning to end, the stay at the hospital was under a cloud of controversy and may remain so. There are still many questions about the president's health and how he and his administration will handle the coronavirus crisis going forward. Joining me to talk about both of these issues are Dr. Ali Ramadan, Associate Professor of Pathology and Director of Chemical and Ocular Pathology at the Howard University College of Medicine, and Dr. Niambi Carter, Howard University Political Science Professor and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship. Lines are open. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the president getting out of the hospital? Some would say too soon. Give me a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Ramadan, Dr. Carter, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Ramadan, you obviously have not seen the president, have not treated him, but based on what we know, and certainly the details are still a little murky, a little cloudy, but based on what we know, what do you think about him leaving the hospital today?
Yes. Good evening to all who are listening to us. What I think that I hope that this was in compliance with the medical team, that they decided to discharge him. And for me, as a doctor, when I look at somebody that's having dexamethasone in combination with remdesivir, this combination is generally given to somebody with more than mild symptoms. I would say with moderate symptoms. And to see this in 3 days that he was moved to Walter Reed and to be discharged in this short time, that I truly hope that he is truly out of the woods. Because this, if this is premature discharge, it can be in a way serious and harmful. And I listened to the president the other day saying that he learned a lot from this experience, like going to school. And I take him by his words that I hope that the president will lead by example. Then from this experience, we want to assure the Americans about how to deal safely with this pandemic.
It's interesting.
Being safely with this pandemic, we would like to listen to the recommendations of our world-renowned health professionals, what they say about the topic.
But Dr. Ramadan, it's interesting that you should use the phrase out of the woods, because his physician, Dr. Sean Conley, used that same phrase today, but he said he is not out of the woods yet. And considering that we saw over the weekend, yesterday, as a matter of fact, that he was in a Secret Service vehicle doing a drive-by to wave at his fans or his supporters, and there were two Secret Service detail members also in the front seat, as there usually is when he's in his presidential limo or his SUV. We don't know exactly how ill he was, but with a COVID-19 diagnosis, isn't it quite possible that anyone in that vehicle with him could very well be infected or get infected?
As a matter of fact, that listening to all health professionals commenting on this, that generally speaking, a patient with COVID, he's at maximum infectivity to others during having symptoms. And according to what we have learned about the president, that they mentioned that, though they didn't say that he was having fever, but nevertheless, they mentioned that twice the oxygen saturation dipped below 92%. And again, mentioning that the CT scan of the chest, there were the typical findings, and we didn't know what exactly meant by the typical findings. So at least that here tells us that there were symptoms. So when you're having symptoms and to be in a closed space, that is highly infectious to others. And now agree that they were wearing masks, and I'm sure those masks were slightly of the best quality masks. But nevertheless, the situation is dangerous. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Carter, there have been all kinds of issues that have come up since the diagnosis late last week. You know, now that we've had at least a few days to kind of look and parse some of these things, what do you think are the implications of where we are right now? I mean, you know, the president tweeted earlier today, don't fear the coronavirus, for example, and on the same day that we reached some 210,000 dead Americans. That's really striking to me.
Forget is that most people don't have a full medical staff on call that can give access to experimental drugs and other kinds of measures that he was given this past weekend. So, you know, while he's saying don't let it dominate your life and don't be afraid, I think that's a really irresponsible message, because I think the families of the 210,000 dead would beg to differ, right, that most of us are not the president. We don't have access to his medical care. And, you know, when we think about all the other people that have been in his orbit that have now tested positive, I think it's a really tone-deaf thing to say. But it's sort of on brand for Donald Trump.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. President Trump out of Walter Reed National Military Medical Center back at the White House tonight. What do you think? Wanda, calling from Silver Spring, what's
on
your mind?
What I would like to say is that I'm concerned. You really don't even know whether or not he had COVID. And because he's so nonchalant about it, and you haven't really heard anything about his wife or how she's doing, but if he does have COVID, then it just goes to show that he doesn't care anything about the American people, especially when he's going to get off of the helicopter with no mask on. What kind of signal is he trying to send? And then furthermore, all of those people down there talking about they were praying for him, you can't kill the devil.
Okay.
And that's all I have to say.
Okay, Wanda, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Ramadan, do you believe that the president was actually sick?
I have no doubt about that he's actually sick, because me as a physician, having taken the oath to be truthful in my profession, I definitely trust the medical team treating the president when they say that they're treating somebody with COVID. I trust them.
Mm-hmm. Although we have seen some flip-flopping as it relates to what Dr. Conley said last week during that first press conference that he had. He mentioned 72 hours, and then he changed it to 48 hours. Yeah, doctors are human too, but do you believe that there may have been some political influence in that you make a when you're sharing this kind of information, that you would make the mistake between 2 days and 3 days as far as when he first tested positive?
Yes, I listened to that. And he later, when he was pointed out to him that when you talk about 72 hours, it means that takes things to mid-Wednesday. Then he mentioned that he meant Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So now it was clear that he was making a sort of a rosy picture to boost the morale of, you know, everybody hearing the conditions about the president. Everybody noticed that he was dancing around the question, was he put on oxygen? And he would again repeat that he's not on oxygen now. And when he was asked if he was ever put on oxygen, he said he's not on oxygen now. That is clear that the exact situation was not truly disclosed to the American public. Is it because of HIPAA regulations? We don't know what is the reason for that, but probably that we as Americans, we deserve to know, you know, with the condition of our president. And I felt that I agree with you that his doctor, Dr. Conley, was not coming forward with the exact situation and information about the president. Miller-Levin was asked about the vital signs, did not give specifics about the vital signs, did not give specifics about the findings of the scan. That again says to this that was in a way evasive. I don't know what's the purpose of that, other than giving a rosy picture about the condition of the president.
Well, let me, Doctor, if I may interrupt you, because I do want to take another take another phone call, and I do also want to drill down on that as well. But let me go back to Patricia. Patricia calling from Maryland. Patricia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
No, I was calling about the president. I just don't believe he really have COVID.
Why
I've
not?
Seen a lot of patients who have COVID, and I think he's lying, just like he lied about everything else. And he's just using taxpayer money to get sympathy because of the election that is close by. And he's telling the doctors what to say instead of the doctors say the right thing.
Okay. Patricia, thank you so much. What about that, Dr. Carter? There were reports today that there indeed has been no sympathy bump for President Trump in the polls that have been taken since he went into the hospital.
Well, I mean, I think that's owing to the fact that many people's minds are already made up at this point. And Donald Trump has been fairly cavalier about COVID. So I didn't suspect that there would be a sympathy bump for him beyond, say, his usual supporters. And even then, I think their support is pretty well established. So there wasn't much to gain, which is why, contrary to the callers, I think he actually was sick. I don't know that there's much of an upside to feigning illness at this point, particularly if you're just going to go in for the weekend and come out on a Monday, right? Like, there's not much that you can get. Like, if there was an attempt to delay election or something like that, you would think that he would have tried to extend his stay if he was really faking it. So I get why people are skeptical, because Donald Trump has lied so much. I mean, that's a fact. That's not conjecture. But I don't know that there's really a political upside to him lying about having COVID at this point.
To that point, I think, and certainly this is debatable, you know, with the Patricias of the world and others who don't believe that he indeed was positive. But considering the fact that at least 8 people who were at the Rose Garden ceremony for the Supreme Court nominee, they also were sick. And that, you know, that certainly, you know, brings this discussion, you know, to that point, you know, in that some people are surprised that even with all of his protection, that it took this long for him to test positive for COVID-19.
Well, I mean, I think as the election cycle has moved along and he's been doing a lot more of these events, probably coming in contact with a lot more people who've not necessarily been screened for COVID before seeing him or meeting him or holding or shaking a hand or something like that. That's, I mean, you know, to me, to some extent, his resistance also to being a mask wearer, right, has contributed to some of this. But it also should go to show all people how little COVID cares about your station in life or what your position is or that there's an election going on. This is a virus. Anybody can get it. And I hope for even the most skeptical of individuals out there, they recognize that this virus is real and that they can get sick. And you cannot look at Donald Trump as your example of what your entanglement with COVID might look like, for lack of a better term, right? If you get COVID, you could very well face much more dire consequences than the president is facing right now, and we still don't know the extent of his illness. So, you know, I would still tell people to tread lightly and to be cautious.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about President Trump out of the hospital tonight, back at the White House. The questions still are floating around, not only about his true medical condition, but also what this means politically. What do you think? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Real quick, Dr. Ramadan, before we go to a break, you spoke about the oath and the, and you know, doctors wanting to really, you know, tell the truth. But that you also talked about Dr. Connolly saying that he wanted to paint this rosy picture. For you as a physician, when you're dealing with your patients, if the picture isn't rosy, have you ever tried to add a little rose-colored paint to a picture when talking to a patient?
The patient's duty on me that to, and his right on me that to give him the truth and the honest assessment of the situation. Mm-hmm. That is my duty towards my patients, to give them a true assessment. And here in this case, I believe that it is, we are not talking about just anybody. We are talking about the President of the United States. And I believe that to be put in the true picture, and it, as the president himself said, that learning from this, and it's like going to school. And by the same token, that he was compliant with the treatment and accepted their suggestion and their recommendation, I truly wish that he would be also compliant.
Dr. Ramadan, I've got to stop you for a moment. I need to take a break. I will let you finish your point on the other side of this break. This is The Daily Drum. We will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. The original Quiet Storm coming up next with John Mons. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about President Trump and his COVID-19 positive test. The president out of the hospital, back at the White House tonight. And we are now getting some reports that the president says he will participate in his second debate with Vice President Joe Biden. Still a lot of questions tonight about where we are with President Trump and COVID-19. Of course, my guests are Dr. Niambi Carter, Harvard University political science professor and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship, and Dr. Ali Ramadan, associate professor of pathology and director of chemical and ocular pathology at the Howard University College of Medicine. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Can you finish your point, Dr. Ramadan, where you were, you know, talking about truth as it relates to physicians, even though this is a particularly different kind of patient? Please go ahead.
Right. So what I was saying, that by the same token, that he was compliant to the treatment when it came to his own disease, to accept the recommendation of the best team of doctors, as he mentioned. I truly hope that he will also accept the recommendations of the world-renowned health professionals like Dr. Fauci and Dr. Robert Redford about the precautions that we need to take, about the use of the mask, about social distancing, because the American people deserve the best treatment and the best advice, and to hopefully allow the researchers to continue their research without interference, to ensure that they provide us with a vaccine that is safe, and after the safety of the vaccine to be truly verified without any pressure or interference. This is what I truly hope, that to leave these health professionals, researchers, working on bringing the vaccine as soon as possible, to allow them enough time to ensure the safety of the vaccine and to ensure that there are no complications, and it will be given to the public without any interference or any political pressure on them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Vinay calling from Southeast D.C. What's on your mind?
Hi. You know, history has proven that any sitting president who has become ill, they don't share the full extent of their illness for security reasons. But Donald Trump has put so many other individuals' lives at risk. Everything could have been brought to him at the White House. There was no reason for him to leave the White House and go to Walter Reed because he tested positive. So why put even the military personnel that's flying the helicopter? He put their lives at risk. He put the Secret Service lives at risk, who, in fact, they have to go home to their loved ones.
Well, Dr. Ramadan, if you could, you know, kind of give us the layman's explanation for that, because I don't believe that's completely accurate as it relates to whether or not he should or should not have gone to Walter Reed, because a lot of that, Dr. Ramadan, really depends on how sick he really was, something we still don't have a handle on.
Right. I believe that the precautionary measure that was taken to take the president to Walter Reed, though, as you mentioned, that there is a unit at the White House that is equipped with all the necessary equipment, but nevertheless, that definitely it will not be as advanced as what we may find at Walter Reed and the other health professionals, other specialists, in case any deterioration in the situation. We are talking about, you know, this type of disease, very unpredictable. And any time things can go different into a different direction. So being at an institution like the Walter Reed, equipped with all these things, different specialties, the equipment that are there available definitely would be much more advanced than what is available at the White House unit there. Mm-hmm. So that I understand, that based on the recommendations of the team, in case any change in the path of the disease as a precautionary measure. And probably now, having him there in the Walter Reed for this period of time, I hope that and the doctors, that when they decided to discharge him, that it was their decision based on the progress in the improvement in his condition. Because somebody with dexamethasone and remdesivir, that is very telling that this is not a mild condition. So to have decided to send him back to the White House, must be based on certain improvement in his condition. This is what I would hope, that these doctors would come out and tell us based on what decision that they decided to discharge the president from Walter Reed back to the White House.
Dr. Carter, now that the president is at the White House, and we're getting reports that he is indeed going to debate Joe Biden next week, do you believe that this gives President Trump more ammunition now that he has gone through this process? Let us assume that he continues to recover. How do you think that's going to go when they appear on that stage again together?
Well, we know that he'll likely say something about Joe Biden not being, you know, as bold as he is or something like that, because we know that's what Trump often does. And he's going to try to use that in some ways to sort of bludgeon Joe Biden by saying he doesn't have the experience of having COVID. I do, and I survived it, and therefore it's no big deal. And I think, you know, if Joe Biden is smart, he will focus on the fact that he is one out of 210,000, right? Like, you survived, these other people didn't. And yes, there are millions of others who've been exposed and survived, but that is not always the case. And again, people don't always have access to the medical care, and certainly not to the drugs that Donald Trump had access to, in particular the remdesivir. The dexamethasone is already out. But I think, you know, Donald Trump is the king of spin. He understands television. He understands optics. He understands his audience. I don't think this will do anything to change how anybody will see him, and certainly not change how anyone will see Joe Biden. But I think it gives him more ammunition, because he'll yet have another thing to insult Joe Biden with. I mean, he's been calling him Sleepy Joe. He's, you know, gone after his family in the last debate. And we know that Donald Trump doesn't have any boundaries. So I'm sure he will make hay out of something like this COVID diagnosis.
I do want to talk to you about some of the more broader issues and as it relates to the political optics going forward. Okay, if it is true, the president has had, whichever one, COVID-19. Again, if he survives, okay, he has survived it. If he doesn't get sick again, he doesn't get sick again. But just today, Vice President Biden released the results of his latest COVID-19 test. He was negative again today. He's been tested every day, at least every day, since the debate. And he has been, I think it just really shows just how different these two men are going forward. And I think for the voters, it is now putting a bright red line between who they are.
Well, absolutely, and I think that was on full display at that first debate. What they offered was a very stark contrast, and this is why I say I don't believe in undecided voters at this point, because the differences between these two men couldn't be clearer, and I don't think that they're winning any points on either side by having these debates, but what they are demonstrating is what you are getting out of their administrations. And I think Joe Biden has been trying to be more transparent than Donald Trump has. I think Joe Biden has been trying to be the level-headed one and sort of show himself to be the adult in the room by, you know, continuing to wear masks, continuing to quarantine and things like that, even going so far as to suspend his negative ads while Donald Trump was recuperating in the hospital, to demonstrate how different he is from Donald Trump, and not just temperament, but in the way he approaches politics. This is not blood sport. And I think you'll see that again in the next debate, even though Donald Trump will try to make this a referendum about his own strength rather than his own failings to address this viral crisis head on over these last few months.
One other thing, and this is, again, a more broader question. We have at least three U.S. senators who would vote on the Supreme Court nominee. Three of them have been diagnosed with the coronavirus. Do you really think that that matters if they are able to still vote even and even if they are convalescing, you know, at home, but able to. I mean, as it relates to, you know, the rules of the Senate, this is new territory for us, and we have seen votes. The thing I don't know is whether or not all of them have been in place when those votes have happened prior to this past week. So does it matter that they are?
I don't think so. I think these Republicans will vote from their deathbeds if they have to confirm Amy Barrett. And I think they've made it very clear, Mitch McConnell has made it very clear, that he doesn't care if this has to happen remotely, virtually, via Zoom, or any other mechanism, that this vote will happen before the election. So I anticipate maybe it might be pushed back a week at the most, but that this is going to happen. The Republicans have been dead set on this nominee, and they're not going to let this moment pass them by. So they will get her through there, regardless of these other senators' conditions and even the president's own diagnosis. They know what's at stake here, and they want a more conservative Supreme Court for generations to come. And so they're going to get Amy Barrett through, which is why, in contradiction to their own posture just a few years ago, they're putting her forward at this time rather than waiting until there's been a decision at the election.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ramadan, there was supposed to be plexiglass between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence on Wednesday. Do you think that's going to help? Do you think it's going to matter? And what other kinds of considerations do you believe should be made if they are going to move through the debate process in person?
Yeah, I would truly hope that Kamala Harris will avoid being taken into circles away from addressing Americans with what Americans they would like to hear from the president and the vice president in the future, and to whom they want to give their confidence and to give their vote, and to really, because in watching the last debate that occurred, I could see how things were going, that Joe Biden that was taken into areas that he didn't want to go there. And he all the time that he was saying that, I mean, here I am talking to you, to the Americans. So I hope that Kamala Harris to continue not to be forced to deviate and to be focused on really addressing the American people, because I believe that Joe Biden, by sending his best wishes to President Trump after this sickness and taking all these negative ads, that really resonated very well with the public. And I hope that Kamala Harris will maintain this pathway, which really appeals more to Americans. That this, what we expect from the future American president, to really be very presidential in every way.
I guess what I was specifically asking was some of the considerations, the logistical, the medical considerations. There's going to be a plexiglass shield. They're going to be socially distant. But do you believe, for example, that anyone who doesn't wear a mask should be removed from the audience? That didn't happen last week when the president's family rejected the Cleveland Clinic's doctor who came around and said, hey, I need you to put on a mask, and they said no. What I'm asking, doctor, is besides plexiglass, besides the social distancing on the stage, do you believe that they really need to bring the hammer down about making sure that these things are seriously adhered to? And what other things do you think they should do that perhaps weren't done the last time?
I believe that we as doctors, we're really there to do no harm. And this is our oath, not to do any harm to anybody, and to ensure the safety. Therefore, that I believe that in this debate, that it gives all of us pain to see even any American to suffer because of any negligence or belittling of the dangers of this. So when we talk about the mask, when we talk about social distancing, it has to be maintained. Now, whether that has to be forced, I don't know about that, but I'm saying that we have to abide by the law. How this should be implemented, I leave it to people that who are experts in this area. But these are the recommendations. We should follow these recommendations because we have seen the complications. We have seen how many people were here. And we have seen that gathering in the Rose Garden, how many they came down with COVID because of not wearing masks. So it is very evident. There's no two people will differ over this issue. And therefore, that moving going forward, this should be maintained, and we should listen to what science says.
So, and here's something else that I did want to ask you, Dr. Carter, because it just occurred to me when we're talking about changing minds or the process for the administration to address the COVID crisis. It was announced today that the press secretary for President Trump, Kayleigh McEnany, and two of her deputies have tested positive for COVID-19. She is the face of the White House, short of the president. An infection or a positive test is one thing, but in order to really change minds, does somebody just have to get downright sick before this issue is before the administration does a hard turn toward appearing to take this seriously? And I am not, and I want to be clear, I am not wishing this illness on anyone, and I most certainly, whether it's the president or anyone else, that they should succumb to this virus. But I'm speaking specifically politically. Do you see that somebody just has to get deathly ill?
Well, we have to remember Herman Cain died. Right? He's been dead for months.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Though he wasn't in the administration, he was a supporter of this administration, and I think one of the more high-profile supporters of this administration, particularly as an African-American Republican. And there was barely a mention of Herman Cain. So I don't think that this administration will change their tune because they have painted themselves into a corner with the stance that they have taken. They have gone from this disease being a hoax, or this virus being a hoax, to being gone in a few months, to barely anybody dying, to now, of course, rebranding the disease as the China virus, which with all of its nasty racial implications, right? And I think this is what they'll continue to do. The about face would mean that we have to admit that we were negligent, we were wrong, and we were most importantly irresponsible and reckless with this virus and our handling of the virus. And this administration, Donald Trump has shown, he will never take full responsibility for anything. And this administration and this sycophants will never say that this disease is deadly, that we got it wrong, and we need to reverse course. They will never say that because they have done so much damage and so much work to undermining the public health community, to undermining the experts, to trying to sort of usurp the authority of all of those who said that this disease is serious, that we have to take it seriously, that we need to do social distancing, we have to do masks, and they issued no federal plan. They just sort of let this hodgepodge of state responses stand, even though we knew that there were some basic things that we could do to slow this disease. And this is what we have for it. I mean, there are multiple stadiums of people that are dead today that were not dead 6 months ago. So I think at this point, to acknowledge or to say we got it wrong and we need to reverse course is not something that is in their vocabulary. It's not in them to do it, and they won't do it because it would cost them, because their followers are sort of dyed in the wool and right there with them. And if they say to these people, we got it wrong, I think those people would turn their back on them, not stay with them.
Interesting. Suffice it to say, you mentioned, Herman Cain. Certainly, may he rest in peace. But as you said, he was not a member of the administration. Also, he was a black man.
But, let them tell it. They love the blacks. So, I think you're exactly right. But, this is supposed to be an administration that's done the most for black people since Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
By his own admission, or by his own words, excuse me. So, all of this is to say, I don't think that there's any value for Donald Trump to saying, I got it wrong and we should have done something differently. Even if, a Chris Christie, and nobody is wishing this on anything, if he takes a turn for the worse, or if Katie McEnany gets sicker, or any of these other folks who've been exposed, Tom Tillis, right? I don't think that there's any upside politically for them to say, we should have done something more proactive and more aggressive in the early stages of this disease.
It's amazing. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Ramadan, is there anything that has surprised you when you look back over the past several days about how this situation has been handled by either the president or his doctors? I mean, was there anything that, in watching some of the press conferences or even seeing what has happened today, that made you say, well, that's not right, or that's not the way it should go?
A very good question. What that struck me about the cocktail of the treatment that the president received, that it did not include hydroxychloroquine. And this drug that the president pushed so much so and bought millions of doses from India. And the many studies prove that this drug, hydroxychloroquine, causes more problems than help, than benefits. And here that when it has come to his treatment, that he accepted the suggestion of the medical team, and hydroxychloroquine was not one of them. That's why that I truly hope that when it comes to you, President, that you accept now the recommendation of doctors, to continue to accept the recommendations of the health professionals when they talk about other recommendations in dealing with COVID for the safety of American people.
But hold on, Dr. Ramadan, and I need to stop you there for a minute, because you brought up a really interesting point about the hydroxychloroquine. And see, this is the thing that is troubling. When Dr. Connolly and all of his news conferences, he was asked about hydroxychloroquine, and he would say, I don't want to get into the specifics of his treatment, but he did talk about remdesivir, and he talked about some of the other treatments. And so this is the thing, Hippocratic oath or not, HIPAA laws or not, that keeps a cloud over this, because I believe, just through these observations, If he's willing to talk about all of these other treatments, from oxygen, remdesivir, and everything else, but then somebody asks him about hydroxychloroquine, and now he doesn't want to talk about it, and he throws the HIPAA laws at that it's not the HIPAA laws, it's the hypocrite that appears to be at issue. Shouldn't he be able to talk about all of it or none of it?
Right, yeah. It's can't understand that. You can talk about the other treatments. In what way, how do you convince me or anybody that talking about hydroxychloroquine will be anything different than this? It is a medication as much as remdesivir is a medication. So when the treatment was explained to us that took all these, from the monoclonal antibodies to remdesivir to dexamethasone, vitamin D, zinc, all this stuff. So if he has taken or has not taken hydroxychloroquine should not be a secret, my understanding.
I'll let you explain it. Dr. Carter, I'll let you have the final word about that, as well as anything else you'd like to share.
Well, I mean, I think the doctor is correct, right? I mean, you spend all this months spinning this yarn about this miracle cure that has come to nothing, and it was not part of your drug protocol. So we know that it doesn't work, and we know that no medical professional worth their salt would be telling people to take hydroxychloroquine. And he took, you know, remdesivir, he took the steroid, and that's what the protocol is right now. I mean, remdesivir still has some way to go, so he's getting experimental meds. And I just want to say this one thing. Donald Trump has better medical care than most people. So don't look at him.
Than all people.
Right. So don't look at him as your beacon for how you might come through or how you might survive should you contract this virus. And I'm not wishing it on anyone, and certainly not the president. But don't view him as your model of what happens if you get sick.
Yeah, this is truly the Medicaid and the Medicare that he was getting at the hospital, you know. But again, that was, and I think that's a really, really important point. I think that in Dr. Conley's case, there is still some political influence attached to some of the things that he has shared and what he has not been able to say. And I think the hydroxychloroquine is a prime example of that. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Ali Ramadan and Dr. Niambi Carter. Thank you so much for talking to us about this. We're going to continue to keep our ears to the ground about this.
Because, you're welcome.
Yeah,
thank you, Harold. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, sir. This is not over by a long shot, but certainly we hope that the president continues to recover. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, October 5th, I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.